Welcome to the African History Network show right here on 910 AM, the Superstation of Future Radio. Hey, I'm your host, Brother Michael Imhotep. It is Thursday, February 18th, 2021, and we are live. Hope everybody's doing well today. It's been a very busy day, and I was just on Charlene Mitchell's show here, Mind Your Business, here on 910 AM, the Superstation WFDF. So some of you all heard that. Okay, so on today's show, there was a story I posted about a African-American McDonald's franchisee who has filed a lawsuit against McDonald's alleging discrimination, okay? And he is the largest McDonald's franchisee in the country. At one point, he owned 27 McDonald's franchises, and today he owns 14. Okay. His name is Herbert Washington, and he's from Flint, Michigan also. Detroit News has an article dealing with this as well. We're going to talk about this because he's alleging discrimination. He alleges that McDonald's favors white franchisee owners and that he has been denied the chance to buy stores in more affluent communities, that he's been denied the opportunity to buy stores in McDonald's restaurants in more affluent communities. Okay. So we'll talk about that. And this also deals with a decimation in African-American McDonald's franchisees over the past 20 years or so. And also this ties into a decimation of African-American wealth and making it harder to accumulate wealth also. And this ties into our show from yesterday. Okay, our show from Wednesday, February 17th, where we dealt with the African-American couple in California that had the home that was appraised $500,000 more when they had a white friend who pretended to be the homeowner, okay? All right, so we'll talk about that, and then we'll get to the story dealing with Senator Cory Booker and Senator Raphael Warnock and the bills that they have introduced to help African-American farmers. You know, we talked about the Justice for Black Farmers Act, that Senator Cory Booker and Senator Elizabeth Warren and Senator Kirsten Gillibrand from New York have co-sponsored. Okay, and Reverend Raphael Warnock has introduced a bill as well. And African-American farmers definitely need the help. There was an article from BlackEnterprise.com from February 2nd, 2021. Black farmers say they are on the brink of extinction. Okay, you know, we talked about this a couple of weeks ago. Then we see in Texas. Now, Texas is being hit with a very brutal winter storm. More than 400,000 homes in Texas, as of earlier today, are still without power after four straight days of suffering in the stark and freezing cold. And now Texans are facing another crisis, a water shortage. Okay, now they're facing a water shortage. There's a good article from NBCnews.com dealing with this, what's going on in Texas. And then also we see that there's a huge problem with the homeless population in Texas as well. Texas homeless population seeks refuge amid bone-chilling temperatures. All right. Now, while all this is taking place, one of Donald Trump's favorite whipping boys, spineless Ted Cruz goes to Cancun with his family, Cancun, Mexico, with his family, while his state of Texas is being ravaged by a brutal winter storm, massive power outages, and you have a homeless problem there. You have food shortages, water shortages, and he got caught in Cancun. Obviously a mistake, he said. Senator Ted Cruz says he regrets going to Cancun while Texans froze. Imagine that. He got caught. He regrets it after the fact. He regrets it after he got caught. All right, so we'll talk a little bit about that also. It's just brilliant. Brilliant. You know, yesterday, I didn't waste any time on it, but yesterday, Rush Limbaugh died, right? And I really didn't waste any time on it. You know, I ain't shed any tears for Rush Limbaugh. I have no respect for him whatsoever. But somebody that did shed tears for him was Candace Owens. Brain damaged Candace Owens is heartbroken. Rush Limbaugh is dead. News1.com has an article about this. We're not going to spend too much time on Candace Owens. But let me just put it like this. Candace Owens, to put it politely, would have been one of the slaves Harriet Tubman would have left on the plantation, to put it politely. Okay? Read this article here from News1.com. Candace Owens is heartbroken. Rush Limbaugh is dead. Okay? There's a whole lot of jokes there and punchlines, and there's a bunch of them. Maybe during the break I'll go over some of them. We won't do it on the air. We'll be polite. Maybe during the break. Oh, I got a whole bunch of jokes dealing with this. Oh, you know. Somebody posted, you know. Also check out the article from News1.com that deals with the racist history of Rush Limbaugh and his comments in the past, because he was a birther also, delegitimizing President Barack Obama, saying he wasn't born here in this country. That's Rush Limbaugh. So, you know, I have no sympathy for Rush Limbaugh. But, okay. You know, okay, we'll save it. We'll save that for during the break then. Okay. But read news1.com. We posted it on our Facebook fan page, the African History Network, dealing with Rush Limbaugh's racist history of remarks and things like this, right? So check that out also at news1.com. Okay. All right, no, I won't say that. All right, so on the African History Network show, we focus on educating, empowering, and inspiring people of African descent throughout the diaspora and around the world, because right now it's correct wrong behavior. What you do for yourself, what you do to yourself, and what you allow other people to do to you and get away with is based upon what you think about yourself. What you think about yourself is based upon what you have been taught about yourself. What you've been taught about yourself is based upon everything you've read, heard, and seen about yourself. So when you control the radius of a man's thoughts, you can control the circumference of his actions, because the mind can't do or teach what it doesn't know. Now, somebody did post that Rush Limbaugh died during Black History Month. Okay, we'll just leave that for what it is, however you want to interpret that. But anyway, so we deal with a number of different topics. We deal with current events, history, politics, education, economic empowerment, entrepreneurship, relationships, love, sex, health issues, and much, much more. Sign up for our email newsletter. Text the word Kemet, K-E-M-E-T, to 22828 to sign up for our email newsletter. Text the word Kemet, K-E-M-E-T, to 22828 to sign up for our email newsletter. Also visit our website, AfricanHistoryNetwork.com, AfricanHistoryNetwork.com, to sign up for our email newsletter as well. Okay, now, if you like this type of information, you want to support the African History Network, $THEAHNshow through Cash App, $THEAHNshow through Cash App, or through PayPal, paypal.me/theAHNshow, paypal.me/theAHNshow. Okay. Through PayPal or at our website, AfricanHistoryNetwork.com. You can still register for my online course, Ancient Kemet, the Moors and the Ma'afa, Understanding the Transatlantic Slave Trade, what they didn't teach you in school. Ancient Kemet, one of the original names for Egypt. Ancient Kemet, the Moors and the Ma'afa, Understanding the Transatlantic Slave Trade, what they didn't teach you in school. This is a 16 hour 8-week online course that I teach, and we deal with thousands of years of history, and we deal with what leads to the transatlantic slave trade taking place. We deal with ancient Kemet, ancient Egypt. We deal with the Nile Valley region of Africa. We deal with the Africans known as the Moors, who go into Europe in 711 AD, going to the Iberian Peninsula, today known as Spain and Portugal, and take the teachings of ancient Kemet, ancient Egypt with them. And this brings you about the Dark Ages, and we see what leads to the transatlantic slave trade happening. We deal with Christopher Columbus, all of this. All right. So as soon as you register, we posted the link here. As soon as you register, you can watch the class we just did February 16th with Sister Nubia Warford, who's a cultural anthropologist. She was our guest speaker here in the class. We do the classes live, and they're all recorded, so you can go back and watch them over and over again. Class is regularly $130, on sale $80. You can watch from around the world, watch as much as you want to. And then for our Tuesday, February 23rd class, my guest is going to be Dr. David Imhotep, who wrote the book, The First Americans Were Africans, Documented Evidence. The First Americans Were Africans, Documented Evidence. He's going to be my guest speaker in our online class. Tuesday, February 23rd. Class meets 8 p.m. to 10 p.m. 8 p.m. to 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And we have a live chat. You can ask questions in the class. And all the sessions are recorded, so you can go back and watch it over and over again. All right? So you can register for that. All right. Coming up February 24th, Wednesday, February 24th, I will be on the panel discussion for Zeta Phi Beta Sorority Incorporated, their African-American History Month, the African-American History Month virtual panel discussion, Let's Celebrate Black History, okay? And this is taking place Wednesday, February 24th, 7 p.m. to 8:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. It is free to attend. We have the information at our website, AfricanHistoryNetwork.com. You just have to register, and there's a Zoom link that they'll email you, okay? So if you go to our website, AfricanHistoryNetwork.com, and right on the home page, we have the information here. You scroll down, see the information for our radio show, information, listen to the podcast of the show right here, the link to read articles that I've written. This is the information for the online course, okay? Tuesday, February 23rd, 8 p.m. to 10 p.m. Click here to register for the online course, all right? And it takes you here, and you just click on the button here for enroll, okay, to enroll in the online course. But when you scroll down below the information for the online course, we have the information for the panel discussion that I'll be on. Let's Celebrate Black History, Zeta Phi Beta Sorority Incorporated, the Lambda Rho Zeta chapter. So those are my sisters. I'm a member of Phi Beta Sigma Fraternity Incorporated. Special thanks to Sister Marnice Chris Jackson of Zeta Phi Beta Sorority Incorporated, who invited me to be on the panel. But just click right here to register, and it takes you to the next page. You can register here, and it's free, okay? So you don't want to miss that. You know it's going to be good because I'm on the panel. It's not going to be good because I'm on the panel, but it's going to be good because I'm on the panel, okay? So, all right, we're coming up on a break. You listen to the African History Network show right here on 910 AM, the Superstation, the Future Radio. I'm Michael Imhotep. We'll be back in a few minutes.
Hi, I'm Joel Wilson, President and CEO of JCW Computer Consulting, LLC, a technology implementation firm with over 20 years of satisfying customers. We offer a full spectrum of industry top-tier branded services. We are an authorized partner or reseller for Lenovo, Zoom, T-Mobile, Microsoft 365 and Surface tablets, Google Workspace, Acer, Asus, Samsung, PCmatic security software, and many more. Our online store features laptops, Chromebooks, computers, printers, accessories, and software. Businesses, take advantage of our free one-hour Zoom tech consultation and know we offer top nationwide high-speed internet service providers, voice over IP, and cellular phone services. Home users, don't miss our current in-stock Chromebook inventory. Please visit us at jcwcc.com or call 215-215-215-215-215-215-215-215-215-215-215-215-215-215-215-215-215-215-215-215-215-215-215-215-215-215-215-215-215-215-215-215-215-215-215-215-215-215-215-215-215-215-215-215-215-215-215-215-215-215-215-215-215-215-215-215-215-215-215-215-215-215-215-215-215-215-215-215-215-215-215-215-215-215-215-215-215-215-215-215-215-215-215-215-215-215-215-215-215-215-215-215-215-215-215-215-215-215-215-215-215-215-215-215-215-215-215-215-215-215-215-215-215-215-215-215-215-215-215-215-215-215-215-215-215-215-215-215-215-215-215-215-215-215-215-215-215-215-215-215-215-215-215-215-215-215-215-215-215-215-215-215-215-215-215-215-215-215-215-215-215-215-215-215-215-215-215-215-215-215-215-215-215-215-215-215-215-215-215-215-215-215-215-215-215-215-215- 6701. For 25 years, the Black History 101 Mobile Museum has carried on the rich legacy of the Black Museum movement in America by showcasing original artifacts of the Black experience at colleges, universities, K-12 schools, corporations, libraries, conferences, and cultural events, making it the most traversed Black History mobile exhibit in American history. Dr. Khalid El Hakim is the founder of the Black History 101 Mobile Museum, and he is a highly sought-after public speaker on topics of Black history, social studies, education, museum studies, hip-hop, and race relations. Dr. Khalid was named among the change makers for NBC Universal's Erase the Hate campaign and listed as one of the 100 Men of Distinction for Black Enterprise. He recently founded the Michigan Hip Hop Archive on the campus of Western Michigan University. The Black History 101 Mobile Museum is currently scheduling in-person and virtual exhibits nationwide. For more information, please contact Dr. Khalid Al-Hakim directly at 313-645-4197, 313-645-4197, or visit their website at blackhistorymobilemuseum.com. That's blackhistorymobilemuseum.com. You can also email him at bhistory101@yahoo.com, bhistory101@yahoo.com.
Are you getting ready for fall or winter? We have the solution for all seasonal clothing needs. KometicWear.com is the go-to online source for Kometic African fashion and lifestyle products with a contemporary twist. We're committed to offering unique styles reflecting our African heritage. KometicWear.com is inspired by KometicScribes.com to influence our people in learning and showing pride. Please visit our website at KometicWear.com.
Visit 4GlossyGirls.com, that's the number 4GlossyGirls.com, and follow them on Instagram at 4GlossyGirls.
Welcome back to the African History Network show right here on 910 AM Superstation, the Future Radio. Hey, I'm your host, Brother Michael Imhotep. It is Thursday, February 18th, 2021, and we are live. It's a very busy day, very busy week. I've been watching the series on PBS from Dr. Henry Louis Gates Jr., The Black Church. I've been watching that. I talked about that a little bit on Charlene Mitchell's show, Mind Your Business, that comes on before this show. I was just on her show here on 9:10 a.m. the Superstation, and we talked about that a little bit. Maybe we'll talk some about that Sunday. Very, very interesting. There's a lot of history in that one. And one of the things that's really critical, because I hear a lot of people talk about Malcolm X, and talk about Malcolm and Dr. King. And in that, how many of you all saw that series on PBS, The Black Church? Because they talk about James H. Cone, C-O-N-E, James H. Cone. We're going to get to this story about the Black franchisee in just a minute. But James H. Cone, there were some things I didn't get a chance to talk about on Charlene's show. So James H. Cone is known as the father of Black theology. There was an article from the New York Times about him when he passed away. He passed away, I think, 2018. And he's known as the father of Black theology, a Black liberation theology, I should say, the founder of Black liberation theology. And read this article here from the New York Times about James H. Cone. Because it's interesting that they talked about him and they talked about Malcolm, like in the same, in that same installment, part two, about Malcolm X. And one of the things, that clip they showed of Malcolm, if I remember correctly, that looks like that's from March 29th, 1964 in Washington Heights, New York, when Malcolm delivers, when he first delivers the ballot or the bullet, when he first delivers the ballot or the bullet. Because he delivers the ballot or the bullet three times that I know of. March 29th, 1964, April 3rd, 1964 in Cleveland, Ohio, April 4th, 1964 in Detroit at the historic King Solomon Baptist Church. Okay. And so one of the things Malcolm was talking about was the Civil Rights Act. And he said, we're going to force them to pass the strongest Civil Rights Act that they could pass or they've ever passed or something like that. Okay, go back and watch it because I recorded it. That looks like that's from the Battle of the Bullet. A lot of people don't understand that speech that Malcolm gave. Because I hear people talking about Malcolm. So the way a lot of people talk about Malcolm, you would think Malcolm did not join the civil rights movement when he left the Nation of Islam, because he did. And that's one of the things he's talking about in the speech. That's why he said, we're going to force them to pass the strongest civil rights act that in history or that they could ever pass or something like that. Because when I listen to people talk about Malcolm, it's like, you do realize Malcolm joined the civil rights movement when he left the Nation of Islam. I know he founded AAOU, Afro American Organization of Unity, the OOAU. I know he formed that. And he gives a speech June 28th, 1964, laying out the formation of it. But he joins the civil rights movement and 3 days before he delivered that speech, March 29th, 1964, he met Dr. King at the U.S. Senate debate for the Civil Rights Act. And he tells Dr. King, I'm throwing my effort into the heart of the civil rights movement. Because when you read the speech, the Battle of the Bullet, and if you read... Malcolm X Speaks, edited with prefatory notes by George Brightman. They have the Battle or the Bullet in here. The one that they have in here is from April 3rd that he delivered in Cleveland. But Malcolm is talking about injecting black nationalism into the civil rights movement. That's one of the main themes of this speech, the Battle or the Bullet. He's talking about interjecting black nationalism into the civil rights movement. So they talked about James H. Cone in the series. You've heard me talk about James H. Cone, because James H. Cone wrote this book here that I really, really encourage people to read, Martin Malcolm in America, A Dream or a Nightmare, by James H. Cone. Martin Malcolm in America, A Dream or a Nightmare, by James H. Cone. Because this book documents how the ideologies of Malcolm X and Dr. King were converging toward the end of both of their lives. And they're moving together like this. Okay? But you gotta like really research and study and read their speeches to understand that. That's written by James H. Cone, who's featured in the series. He's known as the founder of Black Liberation Theology. So read this article from New York Times, and this was his obituary when he passed away. This is from April 29th, 2018. All right. And then we know Reverend Jeremiah Wright, who was President Obama's pastor. Reverend Jeremiah Wright comes out of that tradition of Black liberation theology. Okay. And Malcolm is dealing with Black liberation theology also, but Malcolm was a Muslim, But he's dealing with black liberation theology as well. He's just a Muslim. All right. Let's continue. So I sent you clip one, Shakita. So let's look at this story here. So we'll probably talk about this Sunday, on Sunday show. We have 2 hours. We have a real 2 hours on Sunday show. Not when I go over here, and not when I go over on time and we just keep going on social media. We have a real 2 hours on Sunday show. There's a story. I first saw it from CBS News. And this deals with a franchisee, a McDonald's franchisee, who has filed a lawsuit against McDonald's alleging discrimination. His name is Herbert Washington. Herbert Washington. Now, he's a former Major League Baseball player. Herbert Washington. He's from Flint, Michigan. Detroit News has an article on him also. But he owns 14 McDonald's restaurants. And he says that the company favors white owners. Favors white owners. And that they won't let him buy McDonald's restaurants in more affluent areas that tend to be restaurants that have a higher amount of sales and more profits. Okay. So at one point he owned 27 McDonald's franchises. Now he owns 14, but he is the largest McDonald's franchise owner in the country. All right. He's the largest franchisee in the country. So when we look at this story, and we're going to go clip one here in just a second, Shakita. So he filed this lawsuit this past Tuesday. And he also alleges that he has been denied the chance to buy restaurants in more affluent communities, according to a civil rights lawsuit filed Tuesday in federal court in Ohio. Now, the suit, and we're going to blow this up here. The suit filed by former professional baseball player Herbert Washington. He played for the Oakland Athletics in the mid-1970s. He alleges that McDonald's, which is a Chicago-based fast food chain, discriminated against him, leading to a $700,000 sales gap between African-American and white-owned McDonald's franchises, leading to a $700,000 sales gap between African-American and white-owned McDonald's franchises. Now, franchises in low-income neighborhoods cost more to operate, have higher employee turnover. Okay, I think we've all seen that one way or another, right? Have higher employee turnover and are not as profitable, Herbert Washington alleges. And he's also a former Michigan State University track star. So he's from Flint, Michigan, former University of Michigan, Michigan State University track star. And he played for two seasons with the Oakland A's in the mid-1970s. Now, he said by relegating black owners to the oldest stores in the toughest neighborhoods, by relegating black owners to the oldest stores in the toughest neighborhoods, McDonald's ensured that black franchisees would never achieve the level of success that white franchisees expect. Okay? McDonald's ensured, this is what he alleges in the lawsuit. McDonald's ensured that black franchisees would never achieve the level of success that white franchisees could expect. Black franchisees must spend more to operate their stores, while white franchisees get to realize the full benefit of their labors. Black franchisees must spend more to operate their stores, while white franchisees get to realize the full benefit of their labors. Now, if we juxtapose this to the conversation we had on yesterday's show, when we dealt with the African-American family in California, we dealt with the African-American family in California, that their house was appraised $500,000 higher when they had their white friend pretend to be the homeowner. Then we look at the study, the article from Newsweek.com, and the study that came out, this article from YouGov, and this study came out April 4th, 2018. Speaking of Dr. King, April 4th, 2018, the 50th anniversary of the assassination of Dr. King, right? Now, this ties into not understanding history and what happens when people don't understand your history. And this ties into the laws and policies that are put in place. 40% of whites think black people just need to try harder, poll finds. 40%, now this is from Newsweek.com. 40% of whites think black people just need to try harder. So this is dealing with 40% of white Americans think that African Americans would be just as well off as white people if they worked harder, according to a new poll from YouGov. Okay? 40% of white people surveyed think that African Americans would be as equally successful as white people if they just tried harder. If they just tried harder. Let's go back to the black franchisee for McDonald's, who is the largest franchisee, black franchisee in the country. Let's go back to what he's alleging in his lawsuit. Okay? By relegating black owners to the oldest stores in the toughest neighborhoods, McDonald's ensured that black franchisees would never achieve the level of success that white franchisees could expect, the lawsuit said. Now, we don't know. This is a lawsuit. It's allegations. They're going to determine the validity of it in court. However, understanding that racism is a system of advantage and privilege distributed based upon race, and understanding the history of this country, is not far-fetched that something could happen with XYZ company. It may not be McDonald's, but it ain't too far-fetched that you could have a corporation that is involved in selling franchises and they favor white franchisees over African-American franchisees. I'm not saying that's what McDonald's is doing. That's what the lawsuit alleges. We'll see what happens in court. But what they're alleging doesn't sound too far-fetched if you actually understand history. So you just have to wonder, the people, the white people who were surveyed that said African Americans just need to try harder to be equally successful, what the hell planet do you live on? Because that's not consistent with reality. That's not consistent with reality and understanding the obstacles that are in the way of African Americans achieving equal success. What I find interesting is when they do studies like that and surveys, why don't the majority of white people say remove all the obstacles? If you lift up African Americans, that benefits everybody in this country. Why don't they say remove all the obstacles? That ties into the study of from Citigroup Bank that I talk about frequently, and I'm going to keep talking about it because it's real. Racism has cost the U.S. $16 trillion. Citigroup fines, $16 trillion over the past 20 years, not the past 200 years, not the past 246 years, not the past 400 years, from 2000 to 2020. From the year 2000 to the year 2020. Okay, let me know if you have any callers, Shakita. 313-778-7600 is the calling number if you have a question or comment. All of this is connected. Okay, read this article again if you haven't read it. All this is connected. This don't have nothing to do with not trying harder. The question I would ask is, why don't you stop trying to put obstacles in the way of African Americans becoming equally successful. Okay, so America could have been $16 trillion richer if not for inequities in education, housing, wages, and business investment between African American and white Americans over the past 20 years. Okay, when you go read this, they're dealing with policies and laws put in place. The solutions that are recommended are not try harder. That's ignoring the policies and laws that were put in place to maldistribute wealth, power, and resources to the hands of Europeans and the harm that's being inflicted upon African Americans. The study released this week by Citigroup is the latest in a body of research that attempts to quantify the economic impact of systemic racism. Citigroup arrived at a $16 trillion figure after estimating black workers have lost $113 billion in potential wages over the past two decades because they couldn't get a college degree. The housing market lost $218 billion in sales because black applicants couldn't get home loans. About $13 trillion in business revenue never flowed into the economy because black entrepreneurs couldn't access bank loans. The U.S. could have $5 trillion in gross domestic product over the next 5 years if those gaps and others were closed today, the study indicated. So this is dealing with laws and policies put into place to create the structural inequities. Okay, so let's go back to this this article here from CBS Dealing with the Black Franchisee, Herbert Washington. Okay, black franchisees must spend more to operate their stores, while white franchisees get to realize the full benefit of their labors. More than 50 former black McDonald's franchisee owners made similar claims in a lawsuit filed against McDonald's in October 2020, saying they were forced to sell around 200 stores over the last decade. Okay, now we're going to go to this clip here. This is from Fox affiliate Channel 8 this clip here, black McDonald's franchisee owner files racial discrimination lawsuit against fast food giant. Let's go to this clip, Shakita.
McDonald's quit on me.
Former pro baseball player Herb Washington, who built the largest black-owned McDonald's franchise operation in the nation.
Okay, it's going to keep playing.
K1C is now open to offer.
Okay, this is in Cleveland. Okay, go ahead and cue it back up and just start playing when it cues back up. Okay, so he said, Herbert Washington said, after 40 years in the McDonald's system, I always held out hope that they would live up to their promises and put an end to the two-tier system, one that is designed for white owners to flourish and grow, another designed to pigeonhole and oppress black owners like me. Do we have the clip queued back up so we can play it?
McDonald's quit on me.
Former pro baseball player Herb Washington, who built the largest black-owned McDonald's franchise operation in the nation, filed a civil rights suit Tuesday against the fast food giant.
After 40 years in the McDonald's system, I always held out hope that they would live up to their promises and put an end to the two-tier system, one that is designed for white owners to flourish and grow, another designed to pigeonhole and oppress black owners like me.
The lawsuit accuses the company of racial discrimination by pushing black store owners into its least desirable locations and forcing Washington to sell 7 stores in the last few years to white owners. At one point, Washington owned 27 McDonald's restaurants in several states, including Ohio. He currently owns 14, 3 of which are in Cleveland.
Behind the curtain, McDonald's is about cultural appropriation and restricting the transfer of intergenerational wealth in the black community.
McDonald's blamed Washington in a statement, saying, quote, "The situation is the result of mismanagement by Mr. Washington, whose organization has failed to meet many of our standards. His restaurants have a public record of these issues, including past health and sanitation concerns and some of the highest volumes of customer complaints in the country."
We fully expected that McDonald's would come out with some sort of statement like this, with manufactured problems about Herb Washington.
McDonald's says they will continue working with their new chief diversity, equity, and inclusion officer to increase diversity of their franchise base.
McDonald's has let its black-owned stores fall behind, averaging $700,000 less in annual revenue than stores operated by white owners.
What I want to accomplish with this lawsuit is to make McDonald's stop the systemic racism that exists in the two-tier system, where black owner-operators cannot be as successful as white.
Alex Stokes, Fox 8 News.
Okay, so that's Fox 8 News there in Cleveland, Ohio. So Herbert Washington alleges that McDonald's is basically prohibiting the transfer of intergenerational wealth from African Americans to the next generation by their practices. This is what he's alleging. Now, we don't know if this is true or not, but this is what the lawsuit alleges. Okay. If we look at the article from Fox 8, affiliate there in Cleveland, I'm going to go to this article here. Name of this article, Black McDonald's franchisee owner files racial discrimination lawsuit against fast food giant. Okay. So if we look at this article, he said, Herbert Washington said after 40 years in the McDonald's system, I always held out hope that they would live up to their promises and put an end to the two-tier system, one that is designed for white owners to flourish and grow, another designed to pigeonhole and oppress black owners like me. Racism is a system of advantage and privilege distributed based upon race. Racism occurs when one race of people control the majority of the wealth, power, resources, benefits, privileges, land, access to education, access to opportunity, jobs, marketing, media, healthcare, etc., and they use that to marginalize, subordinate, and do harm to another race of people. If we look at the story from Wednesday's show dealing with the African American family, that their house was appraised $500,000 more when they had a white friend who posed as the homeowner, as opposed to African Americans being the homeowner. Then we look at the study from 2018 from the joint study from the Brookings Institute and Gallup that shows a segregation tax when it comes to African American home ownership and how African American homes are devalued at $156 billion less than comparable white homes. That's a loss of wealth, $156 billion in lost wealth just dealing with the value of our homes. And then we see all these structural inequities show up in the racial wealth gap, the median household wealth of a white family is 10 times that of an African-American family. That's dealing with structural inequities that are the result of laws and policies and the legacy of slavery and Jim Crow segregation, redlining, et cetera. So Let's go back to the one from CBS News. So read these here, and then we're gonna get to the one dealing with the farmers, because all this is tied together. African American farmers have been discriminated against, and they need help. They need policies that help them. So targeted me for extinction. Targeted me for extinction during a video conference this past Tuesday, which would have been the 16th. Herbert Washington said he had been fighting a two-tiered system since he bought his franchise in Rochester, New York, 40 years ago. Okay. He at one point owned 27 restaurants, but was made to sell 7 stores over the last several years to white owners, he said. He now owns 12 restaurants in Northeast Ohio and 2 in Pennsylvania. He blames his advocacy on behalf of Black McDonald's owners for his troubles with the company. He blames his advocacy on behalf of African-American McDonald's owners for his troubles with the company. He said, McDonald's has targeted me for extinction. McDonald's has targeted me for extinction. The Arches are in full-scale retaliation mode against me, the Golden Arches. Now, McDonald's Corporation denied his assertions. In a statement to CBS Money Watch, McDonald's said Herbert Washington faces business challenges. The company invested significantly in his organization while granting him numerous chances over the years to address the issues, McDonald's added. They went on to say this situation is the result of years of mismanagement by Mr. Washington, whose organization has failed to meet many of our standards on people, operations, guest satisfaction, and reinvestment, according to the company. Now, according to the lawsuit, the number of Black McDonald's franchise owners in the U.S. stands at 186, which is down from 377 in 1998. In 1998, it was 377. Today is almost half of that, 186. The company said in response, McDonald's said in response, that while the total number of its U.S. restaurants has risen from around 12,500 at the end of 1998 to 14,000 today, the percentage of stores owned by African Americans is broadly unchanged. Yeah, but see, you playing a shell game, okay? Game recognizes game. You can't slick a can of oil. What you're doing is you're trying to say, okay, so today we have more restaurants, okay? So the percentage of Blacks, the percentage of Black-owned franchisees in comparison to the total number of restaurants is virtually unchanged. No, run that game on somebody else. Look, it was 377. We ain't looking at percentage. We're looking at raw numbers. There was 377 franchises owned by African Americans in 1998. Today is 186. It's almost half. Okay? So you can't show us the other stores, the increase from 12,500 to 14,000. We don't care about that. What we focused on is the decimation, or the perceived decimation, or the allegations of decimation of African-American franchisees. So let me just, okay. How should I put this? McDonald's. Let me help y'all out here. When you come talking to Black people, don't come with no BS like this. I'm trying to help you. I don't eat McDonald's. I rarely eat. I'm a vegetarian. Okay, so if I'm traveling, I may get fries once in a while, or you know, I'm more likely to get a salad from. But let me help y'all out here. The worst thing you could do is obviously you ain't go talk to your head of diversity or whoever the hell you got when you put some stuff out like that and you try to skew it to the increase in McDonald's franchise, McDonald's restaurants, and try to say the percentage of African-American of African-American franchisees, the percentage is unchanged when we're looking at almost half of the black restaurants restaurants owned by African-Americans. We're looking at a reduction of almost half when we look at raw numbers. Come on. You make yourself look guilty when you do that. I'm not saying you are. I'm just saying you make yourself look guilty when you come with a poor argument like that. All right, so check out this article here from CBS News, and you know, game recognizes game. You can't slick a can of oil. I went to business school also. That's some BS right there that y'all tried to run. I just want to let you know that. All right, look, we're out of time here on 9:10 a.m. Superstation. Are those watching on our Facebook fan page, The African History Network, The African History Network, and my YouTube channel, Michael M. Hotep, I-M-H-O-T-E-P. Keep watching. We're going to get to this story. We're going to squeeze in the story here dealing with black farmers. We'll probably deal with it some more Friday. I don't think I'll be on Roland Martin Unfiltered on Friday. Roland will be in, I think he said, St. Louis, and it sounds like he's going to be on location, and they have some other stuff going on, so we'll see. I don't know. But I'll be back here Friday, 11 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Register for our online course, Ancient Kemet, the Moors, and the Ma'afa, Understanding the Transatlantic Slave Trade, what they didn't teach you in school. Visit AfricanHistoryNetwork.com, AfricanHistoryNetwork.com, as soon as you register. You can watch the class from Tuesday, February 16th, and Tuesday, February 23rd, our guest speaker in the class will be Dr. David M. Hotep, author of The First Americans Were Africans, Documented Evidence. Remember, right now is correct, wrong behavior is not over till we win, Wakanda forever. We'll talk to you tomorrow night. Peace. All right, stand by, everybody. Stand by. All right, let's squeeze in this. We're going to squeeze in this last story. Ted Cruz, we'll deal with Ted Friday, okay? It's been a long day. I got to bed. I was up editing a video. I got to bed 5 in the morning. I'm tired, okay? So we're going to do a little bit with the black farmers, then we got to get the hell out of here. It's been a long week. All right, but I'm telling y'all right now, that statement from McDonald's, that I'm not saying they are guilty, but when you look at this, I'm not saying they are guilty, but when you put some stuff out like this, this insults our intelligence. According to the lawsuit, the number of black McDonald's franchise owners in the U.S. stands at 186, down from 377 in 1998. Okay. Now, Roland Martin has done. Now, Roland, on February 16th, Roland did a segment of his show dealing with this lawsuit. Roland Martin Unfiltered. Go watch that. Okay. I think we have the link here. We'll post the link here also. So go. Well, do we have it here? Yeah, go watch that at Roland's on YouTube, okay? Roland Martin on YouTube. That's from February 16th. And Roland has done some stories recently dealing with African-American franchisees that had to sell their stores and the reduction in African-American franchisees, okay? So... you have almost half the number of McDonald's franchises today owned by African Americans that you did in 1998. The company said in response that while the total number of its U.S. restaurants has risen from 12,500 at the end of 1998 to 14,000 today, the percentage of stores owned by blacks is broadly unchanged. This is a shell game. What the hell we care about the percentage when you go from 377 black-owned restaurants to 186? when you do stuff, when you put out stuff like that, that makes you look guilty. That makes you look guilty and insults our intelligence. Because either you think we're stupid or you're stupid when you put out something like this. Go read this. We'll just leave it right there. You see, because I've heard a lot. I've known McDonald's franchisees, African-American McDonald's franchisees, over the like last 20 years. And I've known some that have sold their franchisees back to McDonald's. And, you know, I've heard different stories, things like that. I've never been big on some franchisee systems from different companies are better than others. One of the problems that African-American franchisees have is that, okay, if you like when you see the commercial. When you see the commercials on TV for McDonald's and they talk about like their dollar menu or something like that. And then at the end of the commercial, it'll say a participating McDonald's. The reason why is because all of the franchisees don't participate in those sales because their profit margins vary based upon their location and the neighborhoods they're in, the type of overhead they have. So a lot of the African-American on franchisees, because they're relegated to what are, you know, neighborhoods that are more economically challenged, they can't afford to participate in a lot of those platforms. Okay, they can't afford to participate in a lot of those promotions. All right, so they have to charge what they can. They're trying to stay afloat. They're trying to pay their employees. They have to pay their insurance, different things like that. So they're going to have different. They're dealing with increased economic challenges that allow the white-owned franchisees in affluent areas are not dealing with. So a lot of them have had to sell back their franchisees. They can't make any money. So these are things that you know, you're dealing with. So and if you're looking at being a franchisee now, I used to know some Subway franchisees because I used to teach entrepreneurship. My degree's in business administration. I used to teach entrepreneurship. I used to do business consulting. I was doing business-to-business sales for cell phones, for a major cell phone company, things like this. So I knew, you know, a lot of entrepreneurs. And if you back in the day, I used to read Entrepreneur magazine. I read Black Enterprise, of course, and Business Week, different things like this. But Entrepreneur magazine, they had a lot of the franchises in there, you know. And sometimes you look at those franchises, it's like, okay, this is just designed for the parent company to make money. Because you look at, they're just trying to franchise anything oftentimes. But Subway, this is not an attack on Subway. I like Subway. You know, I get the veggie footlong. But Subway each year, year after year after year, they were like the number one growing franchise. Okay, based upon the number of stores that they sold. They were like the number one franchise. They kept growing year after year. But with Subway, they didn't have territory protection. So with some franchises, they have territory protection, meaning that it is stipulated in your contract, okay, they won't sell a franchise, or there will not be another XYZ owner or XYZ store within a 2-square-mile radius of your store or a 3-square-mile radius or whatever it is. That gives you some type of territory protection. Subway ain't have that. So you got, you know, Subway a mile away, half a mile away, whatever. They didn't have that type of territory protection. So then it causes a cannibalization in you and other franchisees. You're fighting over some of the, you know, a lot of the same customers. And the parent company just focused on selling more franchises and getting the royalties each each month. So, okay, so check out that article. And check out that story. And then the one from Cleveland, Fox 8 in Cleveland. Okay. And they have the clip in there also. These are real fights that African-American entrepreneurs are fighting. Because I hear people say we need to build businesses and do all this, do all that. Most of them ain't built shit. I'm just going to be really honest with you. Most of them haven't built anything. Because when you out here and you fighting and you in business, and I have been, dude, it ain't all that theory. A lot of that stuff you see in documentaries, all that stuff go out the window. I'm serious. I've managed African-American owned companies where we had city contracts, city of Detroit contracts with the county of Wayne, state of Michigan. We've done consultant work for for-profit organizations, non-profit organizations, you name it. A lot of that stuff you see in documentaries, and I'm in 7 documentaries, a lot of that stuff go out the window. You know, at least when I speak from like, I ain't speaking textbook. Textbook is in the classroom. I'm speaking like from real personal experience out in the trenches, the real hand-to-hand combat of business ownership, especially small business ownership, like the real in the trenches, hand-to-hand combat, stuff that you're not going to read in the textbooks. All right. So read this one also. This is a good article as well. Black McDonald's franchise owner files racial discrimination lawsuit against fast food giant. Okay, so let's transition. Let's go to this article here from, this is one from Black Enterprise that I saw from a couple of days ago. This deals with African-American farmers once again.
With BlackBusinessTea.com, the messages are clear and meaningful. Keep your business in the black and out of the red. Mind your black business. Know your numbers and plan strategically. Black business boss, lead your industry. Support black business. Encourage, patronize, and uplift one another. BlackBusinessTea.com currently has products sold in Detroit, Atlanta, Chicago, and Los Angeles, with proceeds returned to the black community. They have a wide selection of hoodies, t-shirts, mugs, hats, sweatshirts that support black-owned businesses. Visit the website blackbusinesstea.com. That's blackbusinesstea.com.
Beans products are a collection of natural, organic, personal care products with an appreciation of nature and bees. Our philosophy is without bees, we have nothing. We are honoring our Nile Valley ancestors who understood the importance of bees. Black Bees created a high-quality, natural, organic personal care line that would be affordable to everyone. Hope you try and enjoy our Black Bees products line and come back and visit us at blackbeesproducts.com.
We all know the cannabis industry is headed toward an uprise in the past decade. What happens when there is a brand that brings this uprise in a blow? The cannabis industry welcomes her uprise. Hustle Her Hemp. Delivering excellence with pride is her watchword. And how you choose to embrace it makes it a priority. From cultivating rich cannabis into exquisite and tastefully finished CBD products to delivery, Hustler Hemp leaves no stone unturned. Hustle Her Hemp's mission is to empower women of color by building business and creating legacies, uniting beauty, health, and business. We are a pure definition of how we want the CBD industry to become in the future. While we are redefining innovation, we bring the same energy to improving the quality of life. Hustle Her Hemp is the new uprise.
And Senator Cory Booker and Senator Raphael Warnock of Georgia, Senator Cory Booker of New Jersey, and Senator Raphael Warnock of Georgia introduced bills to help minority farmers, specifically African-American farmers, and they need it. They need the help. Let me see, where is this article here? All right, we'll pull this up. Just give me a minute here. I think I have it in Firefox, but I closed out Firefox. Well, Senators Cory Booker, Raphael Warnock introduced bills to help minority farmers. They introduced separate bills to help Black farmers by closing equity gaps and improving diversity within food and agricultural policy and politics. And Senator Cory Booker's bill is the Justice for Black Farmers Act. Justice for Black Farmers Act. And let me pull this up here. Okay, let's see. Then there was one from February 2nd from Black Enterprise. Black farmers say they are on the brink of extinction. Black farmers say they are on the brink of extinction. All right, let's pull this up here. Okay, so this one is from February 12th. 2021 from Black Enterprise. Let's see. Okay, so Senator Cory Booker reintroduced the Justice for Black Farmers Act, which will address. I close up this ad here. He reintroduced the Justice for Black Farmers Act, which will address discrimination and injustices committed against African-American farmers by the U.S. Department of Agriculture. Once again, this is dealing with policy. This is dealing with laws. OK, this is not about try harder. This is like try stop screwing us over. This is like try correcting the policies and laws that were put into place by the federal government. Now, Booker, Senator Cory Booker introduced his bill last fall, fall 2020, and it was endorsed by more than 100 groups representing farmers of color, but it died in committee. It died in committee, okay? So this is, I think it may have been the Agriculture Committee or something that it was on. It did not come to the Senate floor for a debate because they had to vote on it in committee, and they vote on it in committee to determine if it goes to the Senate floor for a debate. So it died in committee. Now, the difference now is that in fall 2020, Republicans were in control of the Senate. So on the committees, on all the, if so, whichever party is in control of the Senate, then they are in control of all the committees, meaning that if it's 21 people on a committee, 11 will be from the party that's in control of the Senate, 10 will be from the party that's not in control of the Senate. Okay, so it'd be, if Republicans are in control of the Senate, it'll be 11 people on the committee who are Republicans, 10 people who are Democrats. All right. It's not going to be an even, usually it's not going to be an even number, total number of people on the committee, because then you can end up with a tie. So the difference now is that Democrats are in control of the Senate. So they're trying to get these bills passed. Now, Senator Cory Booker introduced his bill last fall and was endorsed by more than 100 groups representing farmers of color, but it died in committee. Senator Raphael Warnock of Georgia, whose home state has more than 2,000 African-American farmers, introduced the Emergency Relief for Farmers of Color Act that would provide $5 billion to Black, Hispanic, Indigenous, and other farmers of color, $4 billion of which would be sent to farmers in direct relief payments, $4 billion of which would be sent to farmers in direct relief payments to help them pay outstanding USDA farm loan debts and related taxes. Once again, all this deals with, so the policies from the U.S. Department of Agriculture, okay, which is part of the federal government, those policies then impact the economic conditions of these African-American farmers. The loans that they take out, being able to pay back the loans, the and when the partial government, the 35-day partial government shutdown under the Trump administration, December 2018 going into January 2019, and then before that, Trump's trade war with China and the tariffs he put on Chinese goods, and then the closing, and then a lot of the soybean farmers losing China as a soybean market, so then they had to go and start selling to Brazil. That really hurt a lot of African American farmers, losing the Chinese market. But then also, when you had the 35-day partial government shutdown, it delayed the payout of the money that Trump was paying out to farmers to help make up for the fact that they lost, to help make up for the fact that they lost, like the Chinese market for soybeans, and you had the trade wars going on, and farmers were being decimated. All this deals with policies. All this deals with economics. So when I hear people say we just gonna build businesses, obviously you don't seem to realize that your business is not separate from the economy that your business operates within. And your business usually operates based upon a premise that people have money to spend with you, so you stay in business. Well, where are they gonna get the money from? Most of them have jobs. But if you have massive layoffs, they don't have as much money to spend with you, or any money to spend with you. Okay, so the money will also, okay, so we have $4 billion of which would be spent to farmers in direct relief payments to help them pay off outstanding USDA farm loan debts and related taxes. The money will also go to minority farmers suffering from the coronavirus pandemic. Minority farmers suffering from the coronavirus pandemic. Now, according to Politico, there was an article in Politico about this as well. Senator Raphael Warnock is trying to get his bill included in President Joe Biden's $1.9 trillion coronavirus relief package. Both men are new members of the Senate Agriculture Committee. The Senate Agriculture Committee directly impacts African-American farmers. The Senate Agriculture Committee and the U.S. Department of Agriculture directly impact African-American farmers. Both men are new members. Senator Cory Booker and Raphael Warnock are new members of the Senate Agriculture Committee and are co-sponsoring each bill. Senator Raphael Warnock of Georgia, his bill is already gathering support from new members of the committee, including Senator Ben Ray Lawan, Democrat of New Mexico, Senate Agriculture Committee Chair Debbie Stabenow of Michigan, my senator, Senator Massachusetts, Senator Elizabeth Warren, Kristen Gillibrand, Gillibrand of New York, and Tina Smith, Democrat of Minnesota. In 1920, around 1 million African-American farmers worked on 41 million acres of land. In 1920, now this is 9 years before the stock market crash of October 1929. Oh, you know what? I meant to blow that up. Let's go back here. Okay, so there's an article from Politico you can check out. Reverend Raphael Warnock is trying to get his bill to help farmers. He's trying to get that put into the $1.9 trillion coronavirus relief package. In 1920, around 1 million African-American farmers worked on 41 million acres of land. Today, there are less than 50,000 African-American farmers. Last numbers I think I saw were about 45,000. But less than 50,000 African-American farmers who make up less than 2% of the nation's farmers. African-American farmers have been decimated. So Senator Warnock's bill also includes placing a moratorium on foreclosures during civil rights investigations, and creates a federally chartered bank to provide Black farmers with loans and financial assistance. The bill also provides debt forgiveness for those who file claims under the 1999 Pickford versus Glickman class action discrimination suit that Black farmers filed against the USDA. Senator Cory Booker said in a news release, "Overtly discriminatory and unjust federal policy has robbed Black families in the United States of the ability to build and pass on intergenerational wealth." You're dealing with laws and policies, especially from the federal government. Politics is the legal distribution of scarce wealth, power, and resources, and the writing of laws, statutes, ordinances, amendments, and treaties, their adoption, interpretation, and enforcement. You're dealing with federal policy that help create these structural inequities. This doesn't have anything to do with trying harder. This has to do with stop screwing us over. This doesn't have anything to do, Black people need to try hard to be more successful. No, why don't you stop trying to screw us over? How about that? How about trying that? As a new member of the Agriculture Committee, Senator Cory Booker said, "I'm proud to reintroduce this landmark legislation alongside my colleagues as we work to correct this historic injustice." So check out this article here from blackenterprise.com. Senator Cory Booker, Raphael Warnock introduced bills to help minority farmers. Okay. February 12, 2021. All right. So that's good news. We had to get that passed, get it out of committee, get it to the Senate floor, get it passed in the House of Representatives, get it signed into law. It may be a good strategy to try to put in the $1.9 trillion bill. It may be a good strategy to do that. Maybe not. I mean, we'll see. Main thing is get it passed. Okay, you have to have a plan and get it passed. And the same thing for reparations. A lot of people say reparations now. My response is reparations how? Explain to me the process. Because most people can't explain to you the process. It takes 218 votes to get a bill passed in the House of Representatives. If you can't get a bill passed to study reparations, how you get a bill passed to pay reparations? You don't have 218 votes in the House of Representatives to support reparations. A study a bill to pay it out. It don't exist. The support doesn't exist. And there's even less support in the Senate. That's what people don't understand. There's even less support in the city. You have to actually lay out the process. What are the steps to bring it into fruition? More people have to be voted into office in the House of Representatives that support reparations or restitution, whatever you want to call it. More people have to be voted into office that support it and vote people out of office who don't support it. More people have to be voted into office into the U.S. Senate because there's only 2.5 black people in the entire U.S. Senate. And the half and Senator Tim Scott, Black Tea Party Republican from South Carolina, he already said he's not voting for reparations. Okay? So that just leaves 2 African Americans in the Senate. And you don't have 60 votes in the Senate to support reparations. Senator Ron Johnson from Wisconsin, Republican from Wisconsin, he blocked the Juneteenth bill. That was a bill to make Juneteenth a federal holiday and give white people the day off from work. He blocked that in the Senate based upon the unanimous consent rule. If you can't get a bill passed in the Senate to make Juneteenth a federal holiday and give white people the day off, how are you going to get a reparations bill passed in the Senate to pay out trillions of dollars, whatever number you come up with? How are you going to get that passed in the Senate? These are the obstacles and the processes that have to be laid out. And those obstacles have to be overcome. And we have to understand how, we have to understand what the process is and how to remove those obstacles. Some people say we're going to demand reparations. That's a wish. That's not a plan. That's an aspiration. What's the process? How do you get to 218 in the House? The other part of this is that America needs a massive history lesson because Americans are woefully ignorant of history. Which goes back to the study from YouGov, 40% of white people surveyed think black people just need to try harder to be equally as successful as white people. It's a lack of understanding of history. America needs a massive history lesson to reorientate themselves historically to understand why repairing the damage is necessary. But then you have to lay out what was the damage that was done. The damage wasn't we didn't get paid. That means you don't even understand this history. That wasn't the main damage that was done. To understand that when you deal with reparations, the root concept is to repair damage that was done, to make people whole again, to restore them to a state before the damage was done, to understand the damage that was done as a legacy of slavery, you first have to understand who African people were and what African people had before we were put into the institution of slavery. If you think we weren't African people or you think we aren't African people, you're starting the conversation already at an intellectual deficit and a historical deficit. You're dealing with a people who've been stripped of their history, culture, language, spiritual systems, their cosmology. African people coming from various cultures, they had a cosmology, whether you're coming from the Ashanti, Yoruba, the Igbo, whatever culture you're coming from, Wolof, okay? You have Africans coming from Angola. You have Africans coming from the Congo. Cosmology deals with understanding the universe as an orderly system, but that's based upon your culture. You're dealing with spiritual systems, language, your whole culture, dealing with how you wear your hair, dealing with your family ties, the political structure you're coming from, your spiritual systems, your folklores, your mores, your customs, all that is in a bag called culture. You're stripped of that. You have European culture superimposed upon you, and you're taught to see reality through the eyes of Europeans. And we've largely been taught to hate ourselves. We've largely been taught to hate ourselves, and most of us have names that are handed down from our former slave owners. If you deal with a people who've largely been taught to hate themselves and spend 97% of their dollars with people that don't look like them, What do you think happens if you just give them reparations in the form of money? What do you think happens if you just, if you deal with a people who've largely been taught to hate themselves, been stripped of their history, stripped of their culture, stripped of their names, stripped of their spiritual systems, been taught to see reality through the eyes of Europeans? What do you think happens if you just, if you think repairing the damage just means giving a check to people who've been mentally damaged? And they already spend 97% of their dollars each year with people that don't look like them. This is why I say if we all got $1 million a day, white people will have it all back this time next week. The only thing you would have done is stimulated their economy. So cash payments can be part of an overall restitution or reparations package, but ain't no in the hell reparations should be 100% in the form of cash or payments. No, absolutely not. That means we don't understand the damage that was actually done. We're equating the damage of slavery to getting back wages and not understanding this systematically. Because a people, every ethnic group in this country have their history and culture intact for the most part, and they use their history and culture to fight for scarce wealth, power, and resources. They have their language. Their language binds a people together. It brings about commonality between people. And their language connects them to their culture. It connects them to their history. It connects them to their family ties. It connects them to their ancestors, their language. Well, what happens when you've been stripped of that and you speak the language of your oppressor? So just looking at this in terms of monetary terms doesn't really capture the actual damage that was done. I haven't even gotten to the psychological damage, the real psychological damage. We're talking about self-hatred, but one of the legacies of slavery is molestation in the African-American community. That's one of the legacies of slavery, because the molestation and the rape took place during slavery, and we see it's going to continue after slavery ends. So molestation in the African-American community, the dehumanization, especially of African-American women, these are legacies of slavery. All right, be sure to register for the online course that I teach, Ancient Kemet, the Moors, and the Ma'afa, Understanding the Transatlantic Slave Trade, where they didn't teach you in school. As soon as you register, you can watch the class from Tuesday, February 16th. Our guest speaker was Sister Nubia Watford. She's a cultural anthropologist. You can watch from around the world. We do the classes live. They're all recorded. You can go back and watch them over and over again. Next class, Tuesday, February 23rd, 8 p.m. to 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Our guest will be Dr. David M. Hotep, author of the book, The First Americans Were Africans, Documented Evidence. And it's a 8-session, 16-week online course. We deal with thousands of years of history, and we deal with what led up to the transatlantic slave trade taking place also. All right, you can visit our website, AfricanHistoryNetwork.com. We posted the link here, but you can also visit our website, AfricanHistoryNetwork.com, AfricanHistoryNetwork.com, because we have the information there. All right, and if you want to support the African History Network also, $ The AHN Show through Cash App, $ The AHN Show through Cash App. Because somebody set up a fake Cash App account using my logo, and it's $ The AHN. That's not me. I have to investigate that. So it's $ The AHN Show at AfricanHistoryNetwork.com for Cash App. And then also through PayPal, paypal.me/TheAHNShow, or at our website, AfricanHistoryNetwork.com. All right, we have to get out of here. Remember, right now, it's correct wrong behavior. It's not over till we win. We're kind of forever. We'll talk to you tomorrow night. Peace.
Hi, I'm Joel Wilson, President and CEO of JCW Computer Consulting, LLC, a technology implementation firm with over 20 years of satisfying customers.
We offer a full spectrum of industry top-tier branded services. We are an authorized partner or reseller for Lenovo, Zoom, T-Mobile, Microsoft 365 and Surface tablets, Google Workspace, Acer, Asus, Samsung, PCmatic security software, and many more. Our online store features laptops, Chromebooks, computers, printers, accessories, and software. Businesses, take advantage of our free one-hour Zoom tech consultation and know we offer top nationwide high-speed internet service providers, voice over IP, and cellular phone services. Home users, don't miss our current in-stock Chromebook inventory. Please visit us at jcwcc.com or call 215-879-6701.
We all know the cannabis industry is headed toward an uprise in the past decade. What happens when there is a brand that brings this uprise in a blow? The cannabis industry welcomes her uprise. Hustle Her Hemp. Delivering excellence with pride is her watchword, and how you choose to embrace it makes it a priority. From cultivating rich cannabis into exquisite and tastefully finished CBD products to delivery, Hustle Her Hemp leaves no stone unturned. Hustle Her Hemp's mission is to empower women of color by building business and creating legacies, uniting beauty, health, and business. We are a pure definition of how we want the CBD industry to become in the future. While we are redefining innovation, we bring the same energy to improving the quality of life. Hustle Her Hemp is the new uprise.
With BlackBusinessTea.com, the messages are clear and meaningful. Keep your business in the black and out of the red. Mind your black business, know your numbers, and plan strategically. Black business boss, lead your industry. Support black business, encourage, patronize, and uplift one another. BlackBusinessTea.com currently has products sold in Detroit, Atlanta, Chicago, and Los Angeles, with proceeds returned to the black community. They have a wide selection of hoodies, t-shirts, mugs, hats, sweatshirts that support black-owned businesses. Visit the website blackbusinesstea.com. That's blackbusinesstea.com.
Do you have an idea or business that requires app development or thinking of moving your IT resources to the cloud? We have postpaid and profit-sharing plans for unique ideas or profitable businesses. Who can take advantage of this unique program? Entrepreneurs with unique ideas, startups, small to medium businesses. Contact us, 267-209-0352.
Visit nomadicsystems.net, nomadicsystems.net today. Intuitive Design Clothing is an online accessory store that sells one-of-a-kind signature statement pieces for men and women. They also specialize in fashion consultations, closet organization, and decorating small spaces. Are you looking for a statement piece for a special affair, or would you like to add some select pieces to your ensemble of accessories? If you're looking for something different, definitely contact Kathy Norman, owner and CEO of Intuitive Design Clothing. Visit their website, intuitivedesignclothing.com. That's intuitivedesignclothing.com, and you can email her at info@intuitivedesignclothing.com. Intuitive Design Clothing is where every entrance is a grand entrance. Soul Natural Beauty Products offers organic, plant-based skin and hair care products that will rejuvenate skin and naturally grow and thicken hair. Their whipped shea butter can heal or restore damaged skin cells to prevent hyperpigmentation and skin breakouts. All products are made with organic plant-based ingredients. Their maximum hair growth oil is fortified with organic herbal extracts and undeniably proves that Mother Nature knows best. It thickens, lengthens, softens, and conditions all types of hair. They even guarantee hair improvement within 90 days or a full refund. Their all-natural 24-hour deodorant leaves the body smelling fresh without sweating for up to 24 hours. It does not stain fabric, goes on smoothly, and has a refreshing lavender and frankincense aroma. It can be used by men, women, and even children. Place your order today at SoulNaturalBeautyProducts.com. That's SoulNaturalBeautyProducts.com. And follow them on Facebook at Soul Natural Beauty Products. Yaya Rule is a line of African print-inspired apparel catered to the black community. The pieces include T-shirts, sweatshirts, hoodies, jackets, dresses, skirts, activewear, bags, and other accessories and home decor. This brand offers a revived way for men and women to wear their black pride and honor their African heritage anywhere at any time. This apparel line is for anyone, whether you are working in the corporate world, are an entrepreneur, or an artist. Their selection will allow you to casually let your pride shine or dress it up as wanted. It is for those who have already embraced African fabrics and for those who are just getting introduced to them. Reclaim and experience a part of our culture with rich and colorful African prints. The clothing line and the accessories are available right now starting at $17.99. For more information on the new items and accessories, visit yayarule.com.
Are you getting ready for fall or winter? We have the solution for all seasonal clothing needs. CometicWear.com is the go-to online source for Cometic African fashion and lifestyle products with a contemporary twist. We're committed to offering unique styles reflecting our African heritage. CometicWear.com is inspired by CometicScribes.com to influence our people in learning and showing pride. Please visit our website at CometicWear.com.
Have you tasted the world-famous No Frowny Brownie yet from the Pink Bakery? If not, what are you waiting for? They are vegan, gluten-free, and free of the Big 8 allergens. While eating their No Frowny Brownies, the fabulous Miss Tabitha Brown said, "They were very good. Very good." And you know, if she says that, they are. The Pink Bakery is the first black-owned, Big 8 allergen-free baking mix company. Go to thepinkbakery.com. That's thepinkbakery.com to order their No Frowny Brownie mix today.